Our fourth case for the day is Egan versus Freedom Bank, and we'll hear first from Mr. Koepke. Oops. Could someone, Mr. Chang, Ms. Greenwald? At least we hope it's yours. Thank you, Mr. Zamuda.
Okay.
May it please the court. Attorney James Koepke of Bulgren, Koepke & Kimes appears for appellant. Ms. Brazos from the same law firm also appears. This is a case involving claims of hostile work environment arising from sexual harassment and retaliatory discharge. Appeal from a decision of the district court dismissing the case in its entirety, finding in essence that no reasonable person could find that the conduct complained of was severe or pervasive. That's with regard to the hostile work environment case. And with regard to the retaliatory discharge case, the district court found, as a matter of law, that no reasonable trier of fact could find a causal connection exists between statutorily protected conduct engaged in and the materially adverse action. And secondly, with regard to the retaliation with indirect method, found that no reasonable person could find that Belinda was treated less favorably than a similarly situated employee who did not engage in the statutorily protected conduct. We respectfully disagree. In July of 2007, Belinda Egan was a relatively young but certainly an up-and-coming banker. She was educated, intelligent, articulate. She was engaged in the community. She was involved with people. All of the attributes that would serve an up-and-coming banker well, and she had a very positive future for a banking career. At the same time, Freedom Bank was a relatively upstart investment banking concern in the Sterling, Rock Falls, Illinois area. They were looking for a person like Belinda Egan to assist in the growth of their bank, and they found her. They did due diligence, and they, in fact, recruited her, and she began working for the bank in July of 2007. For the first 2 months, things went very well. She interacted with superiors and subordinates. She was in management, obviously. She was the vice president of retail banking. She traveled to Iowa, where she met with the CEO of the two banking concerns. There's Valley Bank and also Freedom Bank. She was invited to and did, in fact, meet with the board of directors and made specific presentations. She worked with her superiors to formulate goals and strategies for achieving those goals. And that pattern of a positive work environment for Belinda continued until September 20, 2007, when, at the invitation of Don Burton, a board member, she met with Mr. Burton. She had met with him before, but at his request, she met with him at a restaurant where, and this has to be considered in context because in a very short time span, Mr. Burton told her several things, and it was not in the form of an exchange, but almost in a pronouncement. Mr. Burton told Belinda Egan that he and the board of directors had the power to hire and fire, that he had advocated strenuously that she be considered for the appointment of president of Freedom Bank. And that was something that had been discussed with Belinda at the time she was recruited and after. She was told that she would be considered as a candidate for president and also as a candidate for the senior management team.
How many times before this time did she meet with him at a restaurant?
She had met with him on
pardon me. It seems to me that I counted this is the fourth time, I thought.
I believe it was the third time at a restaurant. On July 18th, they met at a board meeting. On July 26th, they met at a restaurant. On September 13th, they met at a restaurant. On September 18th, they met at a board meeting. And then on September 20th, following Belinda's meeting with the CEO, Larry Henson, Mr. Burton called her on the telephone and invited her to meet him at a restaurant, and she did, and that was the third time that that had occurred. Okay. And it was at that restaurant meeting that Mr. Burton had this exchange with her. And again, it wasn't really an exchange. It was a pronouncement. He said, I have the power to hire and fire, and by that he meant collectively with the entire board, and that he had advocated strenuously that she be appointed president. In fact, he said that he told the board that if he was going to invest his money in Freedom Bank, he wanted Belinda Egan to be president. And then in almost that same breath, he shared with her his sexual fantasies that he had had for her, and then invited her to his home some days later so effectively he could act out on those fantasies. Belinda declined. It was reported the next day. And then an investigation ensued and initiated by Mr. Minnick, the vice president of human resources. Almost immediately, Mr. Burton resigned from the board. He refused to participate in the investigation by Mr. Minnick. He refused to be interviewed by Mr. Minnick. He stated that his reason for resignation was suddenly his health concerns or his wife's health concerns. Mr. Minnick reported shortly thereafter, some days, to Belinda Egan that the bank had undertaken measures to assure that there would be no reoccurrence. He later testified that he neither substantiated nor found her claims to be unsubstantiated. But the letter that he sent contemporaneously with the investigation was, we've taken action to make sure that this does not reoccur.
Well, wasn't that accurate? I mean, the bank accepted the resignation. There was no reoccurrence, was there?
No, that is true. Mr. Burton was then out of the picture, and there was no reoccurrence.
Does your position here require that any time there is a proposition from a higher-ranking official to a lower-ranking official that's rebuffed without follow-up, that amounts by itself to a Title VII violation?
No, sir, but this does not stand alone. It's not by itself. It's what followed that made this the hostile work environment as a result of the sexual harassment. Because, as I've described, there was this very positive working relationship between Belinda and her superiors before September 20.
That all makes sense in terms of your retaliation claim, but I have trouble seeing how that adds up to a hostile environment at this point, given that Burton's out of the picture.
Except that the people that remained appeared to, not necessarily in terms of sexual overtures, but in terms of their conduct toward Belinda. That continued. Or
who
I should
in,
say
who
changed.
In, who in particular? I missed a little bit on the sequence. What's the new president's name?
The new president is David Barajas, Jr. The president at the time that this occurred was Greg Dempsey.
I thought there was a... Who's the guy that said she should have been fired?
That was David Barajas, who came on the scene.
Barajas?
Barajas.
Oh, Barajas. Oh, thank you.
Yes, sir.
Want to get that right.
That occurred in roughly October of 2007.
Was Dempsey treating her differently?
No.
Okay. He was her immediate boss at that point.
Yes, sir, but he was also a lame duck.
Right. But when was the decision made to put Barajas in as the new president?
In my review of the bank's records, it's not entirely clear, but it was most likely October or November, and then he took over in December.
Okay, I understand he took over then. And when did your client know that Barajas was going to be taking over?
She found out at the time that it occurred. In fact, she found out the day after he took over, in December of 07.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And before December, what was there a change in treatment for her?
Yes, sir.
From the time between Burton's, whatever he did, and when Barajas took over?
Yes, sir. Belinda testified that almost immediately after September 27 of 07, her duties and responsibilities diminished. Her efforts to speak with her superiors about her plans for what she was supposed to do and what she was supposed to implement were basically rebuffed. She was told in this letter that if there were problems, to meet with CEO Henson. And on paper, that looks wonderful, except that Larry Henson, from September 27, 07 forward, effectively refused to meet or interact with her. So it was hollow in terms of what the letter indicated. There was...
Help me understand how that's sexual harassment as opposed to part of your retaliation claim.
And I think it crosses over because of the hostile work environment that was created as a result of the harassment and the reporting. I think the hostile work environment and the retaliatory discharge, insofar as those operative facts are concerned, overlap.
Was the harassment with reduction in her work, or was there some sort of a shunning?
Yes, both.
You didn't use that word. I just wondered if it was just less communication.
Yes. Yes, she would, and it obviously escalated once Mr. Barajas took over, but she would try to arrange meetings with Mr. Barajas, again, to ascertain specifically what he was looking for in terms of her position as vice president of retail banking, and that was just ignored.
But she was never, obviously, once Barajas is there, she's not looking to be president.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we're not complaining of that. But when Mr. Barajas did take over, immediately in December and January, he created four new positions, made four new hires to fill those positions, never gave any consideration whatsoever to Belinda's qualifications to fulfill some of those positions, began to withdraw more of her duties and responsibilities and transfer those to these new hires. And then once he had adequately covered all of the responsibilities that Belinda had previously performed by shipping them to these other hires, then on February 22, 2008, he determines that what she has remaining is duplicative of another employee, Carrie Lamb's, responsibilities, and there's no longer any need for her. She is the only management employee who is discharged on that basis because her position was eliminated, according to Mr. Barajas. And I think it's instructive, if you look at the letter noticing her of her termination, that it says, I've decided to eliminate your position, your employment is terminated. It wasn't until months later that, and after this litigation was initiated and there was an opportunity to consult with counsel, that Mr. Barajas first came up with the notion that, hey, I did this out of economic considerations because Belinda's responsibilities on February 22, 08 were duplicative of other responsibilities, or the responsibilities of other employees. First of all, it's something he created. The idea that it was an economic move is absurd when you consider that within the 2 months prior to her termination, he added $200,000 to the salary of the bank because of the four new hires and shifted responsibilities to those four new hires. I think what's really instructive is you have to consider this, as you indicated before, Judge Mannion, about what was really the mindset of Mr. Barajas when he made the decision to terminate Belinda's employment. And the only thing that can possibly relate back to is that statement before he became president, before he came on board, I heard Belinda pulled the stunt for which she should have been fired. And you have to look at this, and obviously we're entitled to all the inferences to be drawn in favor of the appellant because she's the non-moving party on the motion for summary judgment. All of the evidence, undisputed evidence, is that Belinda's performance was fine. There were no reprimands, no disciplinary actions. She didn't do anything to put the bank in an adverse light. She was meeting all of the employer's legitimate expectations. The only conclusion, the only logical conclusion that can be drawn by way of inference is that Mr. Barajas was necessarily referring to Belinda's report of Mr. Burton's inappropriate sexual advances.
When did he make that statement?
Mr. Barajas made that statement to Mr. Dempsey in October.
No, and he was hired as president in December?
Right, but the decision had already been made by the board to terminate Mr. Dempsey, and that was in basically while they were looking for a new president. And my interpretation of the bank's records from the board meetings indicated that most certainly Mr. Barajas had the nod.
What was his relationship when he made that statement?
I believe he was the incoming president. I don't know
already if already determined?
Yes, sir.
So she was no longer in the picture of being president.
Correct.
At that stage.
She did not know that, but that is a true statement.
You said a moment ago the only logical conclusion is that Barajas was talking about her complaint. For your purposes, isn't it enough just to say that that is one reasonable conclusion?
For my purpose, yes, sir, because I'm entitled to the inference under the circumstances and status of the case.
Was Mr. Burton a big depositor?
Yes.
Yeah. And he took his money out, I assume, when he quit the board, right?
I can't speak to that, and I will say in respect to counsel, there's a motion pending to seal records. I'm not going to address that, but there were large deposits, and that information, the exact amounts, were part of the sealed records. And
I'm just reading between the lines on that. I assume that's what happens.
When, yes, sir.
And that may be why he said that. But anyway, that's beside the point we're.
I think clearly when you look at
time for rebuttal or
yes, sir. And there's one other issue briefly. I just want to reiterate too that the magistrate's decision regarding fees for the work on the reply brief necessitated by the delay in being able to complete the bank representative's depositions, we think inappropriate. It's, I think, adequately briefed by appellant and not addressed by appellee. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. For the defense, Mr. Zamuda.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Counsel. I represent Freedom Bank in this case, and as we see it, this appeal concerns two primary issues. Number one, whether Freedom Bank took reasonable steps to address Ms. Egan's stated concern of perceived harassment such that Freedom Bank is not vicariously liable to Ms. Egan. And second, whether Ms. Egan has failed to show retaliation by either the direct or indirect methods of proof, as mentioned during counsel's argument. We think, for the reasons stated in our brief, that the court should answer both of these questions in the affirmative and affirm the district court's summary judgment ruling. The first case this morning was an example of how plaintiffs often tout timing in their favor in terms of showing or being indicative of discriminatory intent. Here, I think timing works to the favor of Freedom Bank.
The firing here occurred 2 months after Barajas took over, right?
Yes, roughly so, Your Honor.
Okay. And was there any evidence critical of Ms. Egan's performance here?
No, there was no criticism of her performance.
Okay. Could you focus in on this statement that Mr. Barajas made to Mr. Dempsey? What else could he have been referring to than her complaint about being harassed by Director Burton?
I don't know the answer to that.
So that it's reasonable to assume that he was talking about that, right?
I would clarify that statement in terms of whether we're dealing with an inference under the law or, as I would say, speculation.
Mr. Dempsey didn't have any trouble understanding what he was talking about, right?
Well, Mr. Dempsey, in his statement, assumed that that's what he was talking about.
Because there was nothing else, right? What else could he have been referring to?
I don't know the answer to that. It could have
been. Why isn't it reasonable to assume that it's the only incident that is in the record? Mm-hmm.
Well, again, Your Honor, I don't know the answer to that. I guess the question, in my mind at least, is that a reasonable inference or is it speculation?
Give me a better inference.
I can't do that, Your Honor.
Okay.
Well, I asked the question earlier, and that's because, for the stunt, she should have been fired. What was the result of the complaint? What happened?
As a result of
that affected the bank.
As a result of her complaint to the bank?
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the action that the bank took?
No, look, let's just walk through the sequence.
Sure.
She makes a legitimate complaint.
Yes.
Manerick, or Manerick's name is, she reports and he follows up. When he goes to Burton, Burton says, so long.
Yes.
Takes his money and runs. If somebody, when I looked at that, I said, that's what happened. But we don't know that for sure. That's what I looked at. I said they lost a big depositor, an important person. That doesn't justify what he did, and it doesn't justify or say they shouldn't have investigated once it's reported. But that's what happened. What she did or said or whatever is, you know, he may not like it, but that seems to be what happened. But we don't know that. It's a lot we don't know, and I guess that's part of the problem here.
I agree, Your Honor.
You're saying, well, you can't speculate. Well, no, but at the same time, what is the the question when you have a retaliation, when you have these facts, then sometimes facts aren't all here.
I agree, but I think what we do know is that the time at which Mr. Barajas became president, which was December 10 of 2007, the matter with Mr. Burton was at rest. In other words, the investigation had been conducted.
I'm not talking about the hostile work environment or whether or not they should have investigated. Yeah, I think they did the right thing. So that's not the issue. I think as Judge Hamilton was referring to earlier, the question really is there a retaliation? Is there some reason for the bank to have been hostile to her and fire her because she did this report?
Well, and I appreciate that, and Your Honor, I was tending toward that argument, but the point is, as I believe, the matter of Mr. Burton making the Ms. Egan making the complaint and the investigation of Mr. Burton resigning, that was a matter at rest. And then Mr. Barajas enters the equation, and this statement is allegedly made by someone, we don't know who that someone is, to Mr. Barajas, which is then made in turn to Mr. Dempsey.
So you're saying you don't know what Mr. Barajas was reacting to?
Well,
Judge
Hamilton, well, those are Ms. Egan's words, and Mr. Barajas, according to Mr. Dempsey, said something for which he should have been fired. Now, again, Judge Hamilton thinks that I believe the only reasonable inference from that is that it was the...
It's not a good idea to put words in my mouth.
I apologize, Your Honor. But the question was posed to me whether there was an inference other than that, and I don't know because I would have to speculate. I don't know what that someone said to Mr. Dempsey, or excuse me, to Mr. Barajas allegedly, and we don't even know who that someone was. But I guess my point is that at that point, the matter with Mr. Burton was at rest, and then we need to attempt to connect the dots from that incident to Mr. Barajas' alleged statement to some action 2 months later in which he observes that Ms. Carrie Lamb and Ms. Belinda Egan are performing the same job functions. Ms. Egan,
do you agree that he had shifted work responsibilities from Egan to other new hires, that the evidence would allow that inference?
I think that's a reasonable inference, Your Honor. I think there's some dispute about that on the record, but I think that's a reasonable inference.
Where's the summary judgment on the retaliation claim? That's what we're looking at here, at least
yes.
What I'm looking at. The summary judgment, it may come down to the fact that it was not pretextual for her to be terminated because other people are doing her work and getting paid less or something for some reason. There was reasonable business decision that's why she left. I think that's where you're down to, aren't you?
Ultimately, I would say that's absolutely true. In other words, counsel says that, well, there were all these economic decisions being made and money being spent, but that doesn't address the point that, at least in Mr. Barajas' mind, and this is where I don't believe there is any evidence of pretext, he believed that Ms. Egan and Ms. Carrie Lamb were performing the same job functions. Ms. Egan was earning more. He determined to eliminate that position. And as the district court indicated, the court is not to sit as a super personnel department and analyze whether those decisions are right or wrong, but only whether they are a pretext or a lie, if you will.
Or truthful, yeah.
Correct.
For the real reason.
And that analysis would be a lot easier to accept if Barajas had not said several months earlier that she should have been fired for something that we might infer was complaint about sexual harassment by a big depositor and director. Let me ask you, Mr. Zamuda, about in your brief, you were treating, you're drawing on some cases about misconduct by non-employees. This has to do with the sexual harassment claim. And you seem to be treating Director Burton as if he's someone other than the plaintiff's supervisor.
Yes, Your Honor.
Didn't he begin by pointing out that he and the board had the power to hire and fire?
Well, that's what Ms. Egan says, yes.
Except that, right?
Correct. But I believe she also acknowledges that he is a member of a board of 10 people and that the board acts as a whole.
So she ought to just doesn't have to worry about this?
No, but this was in the context of a meeting at the restaurant in which she claims that she was sexually harassed. Again, at the point that the decision was made to eliminate her job position, Mr. Burton had been gone for several months.
Right. I'm going back, though, to the argument you're making about the sexual harassment claim. And you seem to be trying to suggest, well, we can, by the cases you're citing, we can treat this as if this was harassment by a customer or by some other outsider, not by somebody in a supervisory role.
While I believe the record is not 100% clear, what is clear in terms of whether Ms. Egan determined that in her own mind he was in a supervisory nature or not, I think she does say very clearly that Mr. Dempsey was her.
Well, sure, and Dempsey reports to Henson, and Henson reports to the board, right?
Correct.
So this is somebody three levels above her propositioning her. Are you suggesting we ought to treat that as if he were just an outsider to the company?
Not an outsider, Your Honor, but and perhaps the case authority is not entirely clear, but I think in that instance he is more like a third party than he is like a...
After he tells her he's got the power to hire and fire her?
That the board does.
Yeah.
Yes.
And she's supposed to be comforted by the fact that there are nine other members of the board?
She believed what she believed in her own mind, I guess. But I think the point, again, with respect to the hostile work environment claim.
Really, you know, we're talking about retaliation here, so mm-hmm. Focus on that.
I apologize. With respect to retaliation, then, the statement is what we have, and what Ms. Egan is requesting the court to do is to draw the line from the incident with Mr. Burton, him resigning in September of 2007, to this alleged statement made by Mr. Barajas when he was not even an employee of the bank, to him being Mr. Barajas assuming that position in December of 2007, and then 2 months later, after he's had an opportunity to bring his own people with him and to determine the lay of the land, if you will, with respect to who does what, and makes the decision that Carrie Lamb, again, and Ms. Egan are performing the same job functions, he has made that determination, and he decides to eliminate the higher paying of the two positions being Ms. Egan's. I don't think there's any evidence in the record or any argument that other than these other economic decisions that were being made, that was somehow a pretext or a lie. And I think that's the point of the retaliation analysis. At bottom is that I don't think there's any basis or way that the that Ms. Egan can show pretext under these facts. So if nothing else, for that reason, I think the district court ruling should be upheld as to the summary judgment decision concerning retaliation. Now, briefly, with respect to, and counsel mentioned this at the end of his argument, these two orders that we have from Magistrate Mahoney, that matter was briefed fully, as I see it, at the outset of this case before the briefs in chief. And I think for the reasons that we clearly stated in those briefs that Magistrate Mahoney was making decisions about discovery matters which are non-dispositive, and therefore he was within his right to do that. And the plaintiff, therefore, had 10 days in which to object to those rulings, and that was not done, at least with respect to the, yes.
Did Magistrate Mahoney ever say you have to pay this $4,800 and change on a specific date?
He did not.
Were these, in essence, still interlocutory?
I would say the first order assessing, which was November 6th of 2009, was...
That's the warning. If you file a supplemental brief, then I'm going to make you pay the defense costs of responding, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
And then the brief is filed, an amount is determined.
Yes.
But I'll tell you later when you have to pay.
That is true.
Okay.
That is true.
If a district judge issues an order like that, short of a final judgment, it's not even appealable at that point.
I would agree.
I'm wondering if these were even ripe for review by the district judge at this point.
Well, and I think that's the point, Your Honor, that what argument the opposing counsel and Ms. Egan are making is that this court is the only court to make that determination. I would disagree with that. The district court was given no opportunity to review those rulings or even make those final. So for those reasons, I think, as we state in our brief, the court just lacks
jurisdiction. The only reason we've got jurisdiction over this appeal at this point is because that's a collateral matter.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
So with that, I will conclude.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Zamuda.
Thank you.
Rebuttal, Mr. Koepke.
If this decision was before this court today because of a jury verdict, I'd have nothing to argue about. This is before this court today because a summary judgment was entered. And a jury may disagree with my analysis. You may disagree with my analysis. But to say that no reasonable person, no reasonable trier of fact, could look at these facts and circumstances, the timing. Mr. Barajas couldn't immediately fire Belinda Egan when he came on board because he needed to shift her duties. He needed to cover those duties. It took him 2 months to do that. He got his people up to speed, and then he took action on exactly his prophecy. Belinda should have been fired for something she had done, for a stunt she pulled, whatever phraseology you want to attach. He thought she should have been fired when he was in an opportunity to do it, when he could do so without hindering his own operation. He took the shot. He pulled the trigger. Now, again, if a jury said, we don't believe that, we think that the economic reasons and the duplicative roles were a legitimate business determination, I see I'm out of time. I think to say that no reasonable trier of fact couldn't find in favor of Belinda under the circumstance of this case is absurd. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. The case is taken under advisement.